D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you, live at Bridgestone Arena. Willie Donick will join us shortly. The Predators are back at home. Four home games for the Predators before the league takes a three-day break for the Christmas holiday. Mm-hmm. Starts tonight against the New York Rangers. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, of course, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. An incredibly fascinating hockey game tonight between two teams who desperately need a win. Uh-huh. And we'll talk more about the Predators later in the program. Derek, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am doing just fine.
Is it wrong that it's not that I don't feel as cold as I usually do?
Well, it's early. It usually doesn't hit until the early afternoon when they're getting the ice ready.
And then it's kind of warm outside too. So.
It is. Yeah. It does get freezing in here. It is a hockey rink after all. We will be joined by Tim Hasselbeck a little bit earlier today. Usually we talk to him at 11:30. He'll join us at 11:15. So right off the hop, we will talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Can't wait to hear what Tim has to say about this Tennessee Titans team. Ooh. We heard from Brian Callahan yesterday, Derek, non-committal about the starting quarterback for this weekend's game against the Colts. I have to make sure it's actually against the Colts because at this point I'm not checking the schedule as closely as I once did. You may not. You might not blame me for that. But no.
The schedule is an afterthought, right? Now.
Yeah, they just have games to play.
Exactly.
So non-committal about the quarterback, and I guess we'll find out tomorrow when the Titans return to practice. We talked about this yesterday. There were some things that Brian Callahan said during his news conference that would suggest he might be leaning toward Mason Rudolph, talking about how he has an entire locker room to look after, how he wants to make sure that his players have the best chance to win. And although I'm not sure how many more games this team will win if Mason Rudolph is at starting quarterback, he theoretically gives you a better chance to win because he's not turning the ball over four times. But it is a really interesting situation, Derek, and we'll talk about this more with Tim Hasselbeck in just a few minutes. But I was reading Nick Suss's article in the Tennessean. One huge problem Brian Callahan created for himself by benching Will Levis, and I would love your opinion on this, being a former player. So, as Suss writes, it's a predicament without a clear solution. The easiest way for Callahan to buy himself more time and more benefit of the doubt with fans is to show progress in these last three games with Levis at quarterback. But if the two options are play competitively without Levis to validate the culture or play non-competitively with Levis to get a clear answer about the most important position on the field heading into 2025, Callahan is in an enviable position. What do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in that position either. It's almost like darn if you do, darn if you don't. But I look at it from this standpoint, and we discussed this a little yesterday. To me, it basically boils down to how do you want to lose? That's basically what it boils down to, and it's a shame that it's come to that. But how do you want to lose? Do you want to lose with a gunslinger that you know, at his best, he may, you know, throw for two touchdowns. Maybe he doesn't throw two interceptions at his best. And then you got another guy at his best. Yeah, he's going to drive the ball down the field methodically. He's going to take what the defense gives you. But he may not put no points on the board, and he still has a propensity to throw interceptions as well. So how do you want to lose? You want to lose the quick way or you want to lose the slow way?
We could do it one of two ways.
Yeah, one of two ways.
We can do
here.
It the easy way or we can do it the hard way, which
but
is something I said to my son.
Exactly. But the ultimate outcome, it seems, is we're going to lose. So to me, I think that's the question. Do you want to continue to throw a quarterback out there who has proven that he can't do the fundamental things right? The fundamental things are read coverage when you see it. he isn't doing that right. So what do? You continue to throw him out there on the field? You gave him one shot already. And luckily for you and the team, he got hurt. So you had an extra excuse to say, hey, Will, just take a couple of weeks off, sit down, where not only can you get healthy, but in my mind, you can see the field from the sideline, and maybe you can learn something from Mason Rudolph being out there. Then you throw him back out there. And then he has two or three okay games, but then the old Will Levis shows up, and it shows up bigger than it did in previous games.
Here's how I feel about Will Levis. It sort of reminds me of, and I don't have any personal experience with this, mm-hmm. we've all probably had, even though I just said I've never experienced this. There have been enough people uh-huh. who have had that ex that does you wrong. Uh-huh. You catch them cheating, uh-huh. texting somebody else, and they say, baby, I'll change. Mm-hmm. You can trust me. I'll change. And you want to make it work. And you say, okay, we will try to make it work. And for a few weeks, that partner is on their best behavior, the perfect partner. And then 3-4 weeks later, they leave their phone out. It's buzzing off the hook. And you see another girl on that phone or another guy on that phone. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I shouldn't have trusted this guy. And that's how I kind of feel with Will Levis. The weeks that he came back, the game against the Chargers, the schedule is just blending together. Those 3-4 games mm-hmm. after he came back from injury, and he looked better by comparison, that was that moment where Will Levis was on his best behavior. And then,
lo and behold,
you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Mm-hmm. He backslides, and he's out there texting other girls again. And that's how I kind of feel about Will Levis. I mean, you can get back together with Will Levis if you'd like, and maybe it'll look good for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. but it's going to be the same old Will Levis by the end of it.
Yeah, and that's what the Titans got to figure out. Is it sacrificing a whole for one guy, or are you willing to sacrifice that one guy for the betterment of the team? Again, that's the question that Brian Callahan has to ask himself. That's the question that Rand Carthon has to ask himself, along with discussing that with Brian Callahan. Do I think that, and this is another thing we'll get into later, do I think that, you know, Will Levis's lack of success will ultimately this year be the demise of the head coach and the GM? No, I don't think that, not one bit. But what I do believe is that, you know, you have to show the team that you're willing to make some of those hard decisions. And sometimes it may not be the best for that one individual, but it's the best for this team. And maybe we don't look that much better with the second guy. But you know what? We're not having the same problems that we had with the first guy underneath center that we're having with the guy that we are going to put underneath center now. You may not win the game, but it's a little bit much. You can stomach the results a lot more rather than having that guy out there reverting back to his old self and it looking completely bad on the field.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on Will Levis and the Titans at 615-737-1025. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us coming up next. Preds fans, don't miss tomorrow night's Smashville Live show at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs at 6 p.m. See your Predators players up close and personal. Get autographs and pictures. Guests this week, Adam Willsby and Kevin Gravel. Adam Willsby and Kevin Gravel. That's tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3. The game, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan at Bridgestone Arena, joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, I know you saw the game on Sunday. Will Levis benched 3 interceptions, 4 turnovers. We were just talking about the situation that Brian Callahan finds himself in. He obviously has to develop Will Levis. It's an important part of his job. He also has a locker room full of other players that he has to make sure that he doesn't lose by this decision that he has to make regarding Will Levis. You're a football coach. I'd love your opinion. If you were in this situation, what would you do?
Yeah, I think I'd turn the page. You know? Hey, look, I don't say that to be, like harsh about it, but just it's like, it doesn't work, right? Like you can't win in the current situation. I get, developing somebody, but I think as we're 14 games in on the season, you gotta kind of hold things together in the locker room, the expectation. And so because of that, I think you gotta make sure that everybody feels like the team is doing everything they can to try to win on Sunday. And listen, if you're turning the football over as many times as he's turned it over, especially in critical situations, that's a hard, so, and I'd just say this too, and it obviously wasn't perfect for Mason, but it also wasn't terrible either. So, I think it was, in terms of the season, it was clearly, look, they're trying to develop him, Levis, that is. There were some things that obviously didn't go great. Would he play his way through it? I don't think you really know until you try to play through it. And I think, unfortunately, it's been clear in terms of, what he's been able to do. I mean, I think I said to you guys last week or 2 weeks ago, like, he's not coming into the season next year as a presumed starter, right? Like, I think, like, that has already been written. And so, and I think, when you look at last week and just the composite of the entire season, I think it's, now it's questionable whether or not, he's on the roster.
My question about Will Levis specifically, Tim, is he is a young quarterback in the sense that he's played 20 games, I believe, in the NFL, but he is 25 years old. When you look at Anthony Richardson, for example, he has had his struggles too, but he's 22 years old. There's more time, I would assume, to mold Anthony Richardson into the quarterback that the Colts want him to be. I'm wondering whether it's here or somewhere else. Do you see aspects of Levis's game that can be salvaged so that whether it's here or somewhere else, a team can get a solid quarterback, probably in a backup role, but do you see things of his game that maybe can be salvaged by another coaching staff?
Yeah, and I don't think it's just like a coaching staff. I think it can be salvaged over time. Look, Sam Darnold is the perfect example of why, you can't just say, okay, like a guy has played himself out of the league. Right. I mean, just the year that he's having, I mean, think about his path. Right. I mean, he's been, all over the place, and he's been somebody's third quarterback when the guy that was the second string guy is the guy that, really hadn't proved that he could play. So, yeah, of course, there's always an opportunity, for redemption on a guy that physically has the ability to do it, which he does. But I think what's different between and I would just say this, I don't believe that Anthony Richardson's ever going to see the opportunity to become the starter. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. Like, Anthony Richardson to me needs too much development to become the starter in Indianapolis. Like, I don't think there's time for that. Right. Hurt last year, in and out of the lineup this year. It has not been perfect. Next year is going to be year three. They're going to be up against picking up the fifth-year option. I just think ultimately what's going to happen in Indianapolis is they're going to have to reset, in some ways, the way the Jets have had to reset at quarterback before, the clock is fully expired, on the contract for Richardson and Indy. So if Richardson's going to prove that he's a starter somewhere, I think it'll be somewhere other than Indianapolis. And so I think ultimately that's the same scenario for, for Will Levis. Like, is his path going to look like Geno Smith's path? Like, where, look, it doesn't work out where you are. You go, you're a backup somewhere, and then you get an opportunity somewhere else. Like, that to me is the most likely scenario for Will Levis to one day become a starting quarterback. Like, it just, I don't think it happens in Tennessee. Tennessee's going to have to reset at quarterback. And because of that, you know, what, I mean, his roster spot, I think, is in jeopardy. And then even if he is on the roster, his path to the field really probably only comes by way of injury.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us on DVD. Tim, I'm curious about Brian Callahan and all of this, because part of the reason why the Titans hired Brian Callahan was because of his extensive past working with multiple notable quarterbacks in some mm-hmm. capacity. And I was asking this question of Derek before the show, and I would love your opinion. I know that Levis's failure, to put it bluntly, is going to rest on Brian Callahan's shoulders. That's just the name mm-hmm. of the game. But I'm curious about, just from everything you've said about Will Levis, not just today, but in all of the other interviews we've had, mm-hmm. I'm wondering how much Brian Callahan could realistically get out of Will Levis. I know that coaching is important, and as I said, it's going to reflect poorly on Brian Callahan, rightly or wrongly, what's going on with Will Levis. But I'm curious about how much you think Brian Callahan could have really squeezed. How much more could he realistically have squeezed out of Will Levis?
Yeah, I think when you are making mistakes that you know are wrong, right? Like, this is stuff that we talked about weeks one and two. When you're doing things that you know are wrong, and like when you sit in the quarterback room and everyone's on the whiteboard or you're watching film and you know are wrong, but then you get in the game and the guy does it, to me at that point, like, there's nothing else the coach could have done. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's, you know, like when the ball leaves the guy's hand and he knows it was wrong, like that's on the player at that point. And I think that when you look at some of the mistakes and the critical mistakes, I think ultimately, like, that's what it came down to. So, yeah, I don't know that you can put that on coaching. You know, and so to say, like, okay, what else could we have gotten out of him? Now, listen, I'm sure that there'll be internal, you know, kind of evaluations of, all right, could we have called games differently? Could we have, you know, majored in different things to get the most out of him? And, you know, I say that just, you know, and I know we talked about this at the time, but look, Malik Willis, you know, goes to Green Bay. You know, I guess less than 2 weeks later, he's the starting quarterback and, you know, beats a team that he couldn't make, you know, like, but they called the game differently. I think everyone would acknowledge that. Right. And so I think, you know, looking at it, it's like, all right, like, did we need to build it differently around what this guy was capable of doing? But I also think, like, the fear in that, and not to speak out of both sides of my mouth, but, like, the fear in that is, like, at some point, like, you maybe are putting, like, a governor on yourself in terms of what you can become by trying to build it that way.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to figure it out pretty soon here, sooner rather than later, if they want to keep pace with the AFC, period. We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. Now, Tim, how do they go about, because this is sort of the one of the essential questions, how do you go about getting your guy if the guys that you want aren't available, if a Shedeur Sanders isn't available for you, if a Cam Ward isn't available for you? In free agency, we know Sam Darnold will be the hottest name out there and probably really the only name that's going to command high dollar. If you can't get a Sam Darnold, now what do you do? Do you bring another guy in and build the team based around that guy and that guy being sort of a bridge to the next guy? Or do you, you know, try to move up in the draft and try to get a Shedeur Sanders or a Cam Ward?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are options. Obviously, Darnold's an option. Mm-hmm. I think that you also have to say, like, okay, well, what's Minnesota going to do? I think you could easily look at Minnesota and say, well, would you rather Sam Darnold or would you rather build it around J.J. McCarthy? And so, okay, now is J.J. McCarthy available? And, you know, what does Kirk Cousins have left? And what does, what's Detroit going to do? Because, I mean, Jared Goff is young, right? Like, they drafted Hendon Hooker early, and Hendon Hooker probably would have been a first-round draft pick if he didn't tear his ACL. And so, you know, I think you've got to be creative. I think you've got to be willing to be, you know, a little bit unique in terms of how you address it. And that's where I think, like, your scouting department has got to be better than other scouting departments, because then you have to say, okay, well, like, what is Detroit going to do with Hendon Hooker? Like, Jared, I forget how old Jared Goff is, but he's not, I don't think
he's 30 yet.
Yeah, I think he's right 28 when he started the season.
Jared Goff is 30.
He just turned 30.
Okay, so it's like Jared Goff is going to have 6 more years. Like Hendon Hooker really does them no good because he's going to hit free agency before he ever plays. So, you know, like if you really trust your evaluation and your scouting department, and like, let's just say he was the guy, well, yeah, like then at that point you can say, well, look, we're going to treat Hendon Hooker like he's just entered the draft and we're going to proceed accordingly.
Now, Tim, getting away from the Titans just a tad bit here, in the AFC, which team is outside of the Jets? Because I understand coming into the season, a lot of people had high hopes on the Jets. Aaron Rodgers back. You add, you know, you have the weapons that you have there. Then you add a guy on defense. So you figure that team would be okay. But obviously they were not. So besides the Jets, which team has been the biggest disappointment to you? I look at the Cincinnati Bengals and say they are a huge disappointment, not necessarily because of the quarterback, but – what the expectations were of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Listen, I think they're – I think there are a lot of teams. I think there are a lot of teams that are disappointing. Look, the Niners are really disappointing. Yeah, they've had a lot of injuries. Look, I think the Texans are going to win the division. I think have been a disappointment. Jacksonville has been a disappointment. I look at a team like the New Orleans Saints. Like, I think that their season has been, you know, really disappointing. I mean, I think so look, it's hard to argue with Cincinnati. Like, they're supposed to be really good. Yeah, they play in a tough division, but like that's been a disaster. So like, I think there are a lot of good answers in terms of teams that have been wildly disappointing in terms of what the expectations were, the money that's been invested, you know, in certain positions, and then like how they've ended up playing. So I really feel like this season, more than any other that I can remember, it really feels like there's a top tier, and then there are a lot of bad football teams that you just look at them and you say, like how did we, you know, this league is supposed to have all this parity. Like, it really feels like there's, you know, the haves and the have-nots, you know, in the NFL.
Tim, last one for you. Do you, honestly, looking at the Titans and what you've seen thus far and, you know, what you've seen from Brian Callahan, yes, he's had his ups and downs, and which, you know, first-time head coach don't have their ups and downs. Vrabel had his. But do you think this coaching staff, this GM, and this president, and I add Brinker into it too, the president, because it seems like he has a critical role in what they do, do you believe they can get this together and field a much better team next year?
Listen, I think the team's been pretty bad, so I think that, like, in terms of getting better, I think there's a way to get better, you know, and I think it certainly starts with quarterback play. I mean, just go back to those first two games of the season. You know, if you don't have those epic turnovers, mm-hmm. they're probably wins. You know, and like, then everything feels different. So I just would say that, like, when you look at that stuff, I think you just got to get quarterback right. And the good news is like, think of the names that we just were talking about. Like, there's a way to get quarterback right this year, just because there's going to be guys that are available, and there's normally not that same type of movement. So, you know, I think those are the parts that, that would give you confidence to say, like, look, it's not necessarily Brian Callahan or Rand Carthon or that. It's more about, all right, do you have the ability, it's clearly a problem, to get your hands on somebody that can fix the problem.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us here on D-Maze, Vingan and Donick. Tim, great stuff as always. And I don't, well, we don't have a show next Tuesday, right? It's Christmas Eve, so we won't talk to you before then. So have a very Christmas. Merry Christmas, you and your family.
All right, same to you guys. Appreciate it. Have a good week. See you.
You too. Yep.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us on the program. My schedule is off completely.
Don't worry about it. I'm sure you're not the only person.
My mind is in a haze. 615-737-1025. We will pick this conversation back up on the other side, but before we do, 1025 The Game and Cromwell Media have teamed up with the Nashville Predators for Coats for Kids, benefiting the Boys and Girls Club of Middle Tennessee. Donate a new or slightly used coat at the game studio and at the Fordyce Centers in Antioch, Bellevue, and Clarksville. Also, on Friday, the game will be at the Fordyce Center in Bellevue from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., taking donations, giving away swag, and tickets to an upcoming Preds game. Coat donations will also be accepted at the Preds home game at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday. For more information, visit thegamenashville.com/coats. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is from Brewster's Real Ice Cream in Hendersonville. Brewster's offers handcrafted cakes, pies, and ice cream flavors such as peppermint Oreo, eggnog, and gingerbread man. Enjoy the magic of homemade happiness this season. Visit thegamenashville.com/deals now and get half off a $50 gift card while supplies last. Willie Donick has joined us. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators, Rangers tonight at 7. Pre-game at 6, of course, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Really good conversation there, Derek, with Tim Hasselbeck. I hope if you missed it, you can go back and listen to it wherever you get your podcast. But I do want to talk to both of you about something I asked Tim about. When the Titans hired Brian Callahan, a big marketing point, I guess you could say, of the hire was, look at all of these great quarterbacks Brian Callahan worked with at some point in his career. He worked with Peyton Manning. He worked with Matthew Stafford. He worked with Derek Carr. He worked with Joe Burrow. And, you know, people might say, well, how much did he really work with Peyton Manning? Well, he did work with Peyton Manning. And so that is something that they put in the press release. Mm-hmm. All the talk of all of the quarterbacks that Brian Callahan worked with at some point during his coaching career. So the expectation was that Brian Callahan would take that experience, bring it to Tennessee, and apply it to Will Levis. And as we've seen, it hasn't worked. But Willie, the question I asked Tim, and I would love to get your opinion on it now that you're with us, is although the failure of Will Levis will fall on Brian Callahan because he's the coach, I am genuinely curious how much Brian Callahan really could have squeezed out of Will Levis as we have come to know him. I think back to week one, those halcyon days, week one, they were 0-0. That game against the Bears was going pretty well for a while. Then Will Levis did Will Levis things. Now, I can't remember the exact quote, but Brian Callahan said that he talked to Will Levis late in the game and said, "We don't need to do anything spectacular. Just go out there, make the safe play, make the simple play. Let's get out of here with a win." And we saw what Will Levis did. And as Tim said, there's only so much a coach can do at that point. So, Willie, what I'm curious about from your opinion is, although Will Levis and Brian Callahan are inextricably linked, if Will Levis is not this team's starting quarterback anymore, that will reflect poorly on Brian Callahan. But I'm genuinely curious, how much more could Brian Callahan truly, how much could he have truly squeezed out of Will Levis than what we already saw?
I think if you're the coach, and I think you could hear in his voice yesterday when he was, you could tell he's thought about this a lot, right? I think when you're the coach, and we jokingly call me Coach Willie sometimes, I have coached a lot of youth teams. I think that's a natural thing, no matter whether you're coaching fifth graders or seventh graders or professional players, you always think you're going to be the guy that's magically going to pull it out of all the players. Like, you want to see those moments where, like, I think I'm getting through to this person. Like, I do think that is weighing on Brian Callahan, because I think he's aware of what you said. Adam, that he was brought in to get the best out of Will Levis, and he was kind of brought in as the quarterback guru. But at the same time, I think you can only do so much, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of it. He can't throw the ball for him. He can't go into his head and say, here's the safety. Make sure you look at the safety as the ball. It's just the student has to take it, right? There's only so much the teacher can do. But I do think it weighs on Brian Callahan when he says, we've poured a lot of resources in. We've put a lot of time and energy into this. He knows that's why he got the job. But at the same time, I can't put all of this on Brian Callahan. It's always up to the player, in my mind. Right? Way higher of percentage than it is on the coach.
Well, a lot of times, listen, and when it comes to how people view the head coach is, if you like the head coach, then the quarterback was the problem. If you don't like the head coach, he didn't do a well enough job on a quarterback and developing a quarterback. So, again, the head coach sometimes is like the quarterback. You get too much praise. You get too much of the blame. But I just don't – I come from a school of thought of just show me what he does well and let's do more of that. And here's the problem. Will Levis showed what he can do well. Brian Callahan said, okay, we're going to do that. But then he started to mess up on the things he did well. So it comes a point where head coach is like, I can only do so much. I've listening to him yesterday was sort of like that frustration. And it comes out, but it doesn't come out with yelling or screaming. It comes out in detailed measures as you're talking to individuals. And in this case, it was, you know, reporters. And he was searching for good things to find, but he couldn't find many of them. it's just the truth. So yeah. So you have to sort of tell your truth without trying to throw the quarterback under the bus. But those that are listening, and if they know and they understand, they know what you're doing. You're frustrated with him. But you just don't want to come out and say, damn it, I'm frustrated with you. You're not doing the things that I'm asking you to do.
And it's extra sensitive, I'm sure, because as we talked about from the day he was hired, if he was going to get the job, uh-huh. I think he had to sell himself as a guy who could get
– he's a quarterback changer.
He could get a lot out of Will Levis. And so that – it's got to hurt him even more because I'm sure when whoever – I think Amy Adams was in the room when he was interviewed, ran everybody – he had to sell himself. Like, yeah, I've worked with all these good quarterbacks. I think Will Levis is good. Like,
but I don't think
he couldn't go in there and get the job if he said, I don't think Will Levis has it. Like, I've watched a lot of film on Will Levis. He's not the guy. Like, he wouldn't have gotten the job.
But
right?
I think there was a bit of him saying, because I explained this to Adam off air. You can't just go into the owner's office and give her just one plan. You can't say, well, you can go in there and say, I can get this quarterback. I can get him to progress to where I need him. You will see sort of how he's growing as a player. You will see it. If you go in with just that sort of and sort of we will sort of the plan is develop him. We'll get there. Give me a year or two to get him developed and we'll be okay. You can't just go in with that plan. What if I'm an owner, I'm coming back and saying, well, what if he doesn't work? Then what is your plan?
Yeah.
I think he went to Amy or Aaron and first game plan A. I see some things in Will that I can work with. I believe that I can get him to where he needs to be this season, and then we'll go from there. All right. But if he doesn't get there, I still believe in the process, but we're going to need somebody else at the helm. You couldn't just go in there thinking, putting all your A's in Will Levis's basket. You didn't draft him. But you do have to go in there and say, I do think I can work with him. He has some tools. But if he doesn't, this is what plan B looks like. The process looks the same, but who's running the process looks different in regards to quarterbacks.
I do wonder because, as I said, when we evaluate this season, the record is what it is. Mm-hmm. It was not a successful first season as Titans head coach for Brian Callahan. And if there were to be a change at coach, I think it would be in conjunction with a change in upper management.
Of course.
Because most people like to bring in their own people. We know this. I think there are let me rephrase this question because I would love for your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. And what you have seen from Brian Callahan as a coach this season, what positives have you seen? Or which things have you seen that he can improve on, that he's done well, that he can improve on? Like, what are some positives we've seen from Brian Callahan as coach of the Titans this season?
Me? I think he's a hell of a play caller. I really do believe he understands how to stay ahead of the game. I do believe he understands, like, the fundamentals on how to stay ahead of a game, how to be able to look at the defense, adjust from there, and try to put my quarterback and try to put my team in a position where we can then move down the field. He hasn't made, to me, those glaring big mistakes. Every first-year coach has mistakes that they make throughout the game. He's no different from what Vrabel did his first year. But I do believe, as a play caller, I believe he's the right guy for the play calling, you know, duties. I do believe that if he had another quarterback, this offense would look much different than what it does now. He has the ability to call plays, but he doesn't have the quarterback that can orchestrate those plays the way he wants them.
I also think the right tackle has really hampered what he wants to do. I don't think he likes to have the extra blocker in there. If he can get to a point where he has a quarterback who can get the ball out quick, if he has a line where he can send the extra guy out in the pattern rather than keep the extra tight end or the extra, I think you'll see another level of offense. I agree with you. I do think he is an offensive mind. I think there have been enough drives this year where you're like, this is a good-looking drive. This is a team that has a good feel. It's been the personnel that has hampered it. So I think that, and I, you know what, I think Bill Callahan is an asset as well that you get when you have Brian Callahan. So you can see where I'm going, Adam. I don't think in the first year of coach, and really this is the first true year that Rand Carthon has run the show, it's way too early to give up on this. You're just going back to square one if you scrap everything. If you have a bad year.
Daryl is on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, wants to talk Brian Callahan. Daryl, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm going to echo what Willie said, but the thing is, the fact that Callahan worked with all these other great quarterbacks, to me, means absolutely nothing. I think it's about as meaningful as a particular coach coming from a so-called coaching tree. And just the fact that they touched the garment of Peyton Manning and this quarterback and that quarterback, it tells me nothing about his competency. And the thing is, look at Belichick after Brady went. Brady, Belichick crashed and burned. Look at Charlie Weiss. He crashed and burned. Look at who was the quarterback, so-called quarterback guru?
Josh McDaniel.
Josh McDaniel. He was terrible as a head coach. So it's the players that make the coach. The coaches do not make the players at the professional level. They have to be talented in and of themselves. There may be some improvement on the margins. Maybe Andy Reid makes Patrick Mahomes a little bit better, but Mahomes has the tools. It's not the coach. It's the player. And I'll give a little slack to our coach in that regard. And this has been personnel malpractice for year after year after year, and if they're gonna start over, it has to be better personnel development, better drafting, and then the coaching will take care of itself.
Thanks for the call, Daryl.
Quickly, there was one blunder that he made that I felt when he called it, when he didn't want to go for it, called a timeout, and it seemed like the crowd was yelling and booing, and all of a sudden he goes back out there and he goes for it and they don't get it.
Yeah.
To me, he seemed a little bit indecisive. And in regards to Daryl's call, the coach's duty or their responsibility, coaches do matter. I understand that Jimmy's and the Joes, you got to have them. But what his coach is there for is to, one, structure, but then two, it's my duty to put you in the best possible position to succeed. Because even if I have a great player, I'm going to diminish him if I don't put him in a position to succeed. Mm-hmm. That's why people like Andy Reid and Bill Belichick, they were so great. Even some other coaches, a few other coaches, Tomlin, Harbaugh, both of them, because they put their players in positions to succeed. They see what they have in a player, the potential, and they put them in a position to succeed. The worst thing a coach can do is to have a bunch of potential and not know how to use them.
Willie, the example I used with Derek before the show was, you know, Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings head coach, has a great reputation for working with quarterbacks. And we've seen what Kevin O'Connell has been able to do with Sam Darnold this season. And I said to Derek, if you just swap the coaches, if you made Kevin O'Connell the head coach of the Tennessee Titans, I'm not sure Will Levis gets significantly better at all. I mean, that goes to your point and the caller's point as well. Like, I don't think even a well-known quarterback savant, so to speak, gets that much more out of Will Levis than what we've seen this year.
That's a really good question, and I would love to bounce that off of a lot of people, but my thought is, number one, when you have Justin Jefferson,
yes,
who changes the game,
yeah, yes,
he changes the game.
Yes.
Every play, he is a threat, and it makes the other guys around him. You know, they've got some decent other guys. Like Hockenson is
Addison.
He's working his way back from,
yep,
a bad injury, but Hockenson is a weapon. Then that other kid,
Addison.
Yeah, he's become a really good player. So I think their personnel is probably better than we thought going into the season. I think he's getting huge props because nobody picked the Vikings to do anything before the year started, and here they are having this incredible year. And I do think Darnold, for all of his faults, at least had a lot more experience, a lot more games under his belt than Will Levis did. So I think it's a little apples to oranges, but
perhaps.
I think it's a great question.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your calls and texts on this subject. You can do that, of course, at 615-737-1025. It's bowl season, and the Game Nashville Sports Network is your home for college football bowl games and the college football playoff presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Today, tune in for the Frisco Bowl with the Memphis Tigers facing the West Virginia Mountaineers on 94.9 The Fan. Kickoff is at 8 o'clock. For a list of games carried on the Game Nashville Sports Network, visit thegamenashville.com/bowlgames.